Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 808. It's the 22nd of June, 2017. On the podcast today, I have Harris Chowdhury, Executive Chairman of Innovaderma, IDP. And Harris talks about their recent trading update and what's to come with their new products. Also, I have Mark Epstein, CEO of the People's Operator, TPOP. Mark talks about today's final results and also current trading. Plus, Vasily Karelis, CEO of Autark Resources, OTC, covers the recent news on all four of their current projects. I also have today suggested one for your watch list, which is Europa Oil & Gas, EOG ticker, suggested by John. Don't forget, it's just information, not intended as investment advice. I also have, as always, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets this morning.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Harris Chowdhury, Executive Chairman of Innovaderma. That's IDP ticker. Harris, thank you for coming back on.
Morning, Justin. Good to be back on.
Yeah, well, listen, I've noticed since your last trading update, and we'll go through the details of this, that the share prices rallied very strongly off the back of that, which is always nice to see in stocks, you know, because especially on the junior market here, when you often have a trading update, they often don't live up to what they've been talking about or, you know, the hope that investors have for the company. But you've exceeded that hope, and we'll go through that in a bit. But let's, first and foremost, for people not aware of you, can you explain what Innovaderma is all about, please, Harris?
Innovaderma, we are a UK developer of life sciences, beauty and personal care products. It's a three-year-old company. We have come a long way in the last 3 years. We have scaled a number of brands that we acquired, which were effectively at the end of life. And then we have developed some new brands internally, brought them to the market in record time, and in the process of bringing them to retail globally, as well as direct to consumer in different markets.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, let's go into this trading update, Harris, and see why the share price took off the back of it. So can you take us through some of the bits and pieces from it, please?
Okay, look, we released the RNS on Monday, and the key outcome, or the key summary of the RNS, was that we are well ahead of expectations for this financial year. Obviously, the markets were expecting us to deliver around 6.97 million in top line. We believe our net revenue would be around £9 million, and our underlying profit would be around £1.28 million for the year, which obviously is around 355% above last year, and top line would be above 80% last year. So I think the markets obviously have responded in terms of the actual growth we have been able to demonstrate, the numbers we have been able to deliver. It's been very exciting. I mean, it's one thing that you can grow your top line revenue. It's another thing that you can grow your top line revenue on a very fast growing trajectory whilst also being able to deliver a good profit. So the decisions we made 12 months ago and 18 months ago in terms of where the company should be in the following 12 to 18 months have really paid dividends. And the most critical decision of that was to move manufacturing out of Australia to UK, shorten our supply chain lead times, bring a lot more profitability to the market, and increase our gross margin. So all of those obviously have given the market the confidence that we are going to keep delivering. We are going to keep beating the expectations that the market would have from us. And when you beat expectations, I guess the natural result is that it gives investors and shareholders confidence and reflected in the share price.
Yeah, well, obviously, it begs the question here. You've beat expectations. Can you continue to do so? I mean, I know Skinny Tan has made up a large part of these sort of revenues. Is that still expanding and growing as fast as it was?
Look, that's the aim. I think for a small company, especially in the startup phase, the biggest element for us or for any company is to gain the confidence of the market. And the best way to gain the confidence of the market is to avoid the hype and to deliver on numbers. So, and I just want to make sure that as a company, it is ingrained in our cultural fabric within the company that we would under-promise and over-deliver. So this is something that we are very cognizant of. The growth that we are seeing in our core brand of Skinny Tan is very impressive. Obviously, that is expected to grow throughout the next financial year. The other brands that we have developed, especially the two key ones, one for the hair loss for male and female, which is going into Superdrug in July and going into DTC platforms, which is our direct-to-consumer marketing platform, which is largely leveraged through technology in multiple markets globally. That's going to happen in coming months. We have just developed and released a 3-in-1 brightening, skin toning and sun care product in Korea, which has received the KFDA, which is Korean Food and Drug Administration approval. It's gone into 600 pharmacies. So that takes, even within Korea, that takes our retail distribution from 800 to 1,000, which were with Olive Young, which all of those stores, which number now 1,000, have Skinny Tan product, and 600 additional stores. So if you really look at how we are growing in multiple jurisdictions, and demonstrating to the retailers that a product we can develop very quickly, we can bring to the market, and retail chains then repose confidence in our strategy by giving us the valuable real estate on the shelf. I don't believe it's going to stop or is going to reduce the velocity of growth in the next year. The last year we mainly had one brand. This year we have got eight. So I'm not suggesting that the growth is going to be eight times more than last year, but what we need to do is we need to be very, very disciplined. I want to manage our cash flow internally. I want to fund the growth internally with our internal cash flows, and still want to do that where hopefully we are in a position that we should be able to and aim to beat market, what markets would expect from us in terms of our financial performance for the next financial year.
Yeah, and you mentioned skin brightening there. Is that a big market?
Absolutely big market, Justin. It's a $20 billion per annum market, largely driven, in Asia. And if you really consider the tanning market and the skin brightening market, it is, in my opinion, at least if you go by numbers, 20 times bigger than the tanning market globally.
Wow, I would never have thought that.
Absolutely. And in fact, when we researched the market and we wanted to create a product in that space around 8 months ago, the numbers were astronomical. So I had to then go and cross-reference and check the numbers from multiple sources and did market research into the whole, the Asian from, you're talking about from China and India, and you go to Japan, Korea, and all the way down south to places as Vietnam and Philippines, Thailand, Malaysia, Indonesia. They're all very, very big markets. And in fact, almost all of the large brands, beauty brands globally, have got products in that space. Now, we just didn't want to create another Me Too product. And we knew that if we were to create a brand new product, it's not going to get the real estate on the shelves. So we did some internal discussions, and we thought, what if we look at formulating a product which would not provide one benefit, but more than one? So we created a 3-in-1 product. We released the first product range. So it does skin brightening, Mm-hmm. It does skin toning, which is the reduction of wrinkles and tightening of the skin. And it also has the SPF 50 plus. It's a sun care product. So the response, we ensure that it's got a very attractive packaging. And then we put together the learnings we had from the Skinny Tan in ensuring that we have got a good marketing campaign through the distributor for that region. So we got into 600 beauty and drug stores there in Korea, so which was really good. So it is on the shelves there, and we would be releasing new product extensions to that skin brightening range in coming months throughout Asia.
Marvellous stuff. Wow, sounds quite exciting. Okay, well, Harris, you know the drill here. For people listening, they're not following you, but like the sound of what you're doing there, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets, please?
Absolutely. Look, as a small company, in the last 3 years, we have come a long way, and we believe that our journey has just started. So in terms of following a company which aims to beat market expectations, which wants to do the talking with its numbers, which wants to create new brands in record time and scale those brands whilst not sacrificing profit, that's us. And I think anyone who wants to follow the journey of us coming efficiently from essentially from nowhere to a great journey, they'd find it very interesting. We are bringing some very exciting brands to the market, and we are bringing those brands in multiple jurisdictions and through multiple channels. Our D2C channel remains very, very strong. In the last 3 years, we have effectively in the last 2 years, from May 2015 when we started up until May 2017, we have grown to 300,000 plus online community. We've got over 220,000 plus unique customers. We are doing more than 20,000 deliveries per month to our direct to consumer marketplace. So this business model in our space is relatively unique, or in my opinion, quite unique to anyone else. And the last one would be that we be very cognizant that there's not a lot of hype in the market about what we do, and we want our numbers to do the talking. We want our results, which we would periodically announce, to demonstrate to the market that we would be growing, and we'd be growing fast in months and years to come.
Excellent. Harris, thank you very much for that. And you're a busy company with lots of products going out there. So no doubt we'll chat again in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Justin, for the opportunity. Speak soon.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Mark Epstein, CEO of the People's Operator. That's T-Pop. Ticker there. Mark, thanks for joining me.
Hi, good to be here. Good to be here.
Now, you've had your results out for the year, ended 31st of December 2016, and as yet the market hasn't welcomed it. It's down, as I'm looking, over 30%, and we'll go into some of the bits from that, Mark, but as always on the podcast, lots of people listening, for people not aware of what you do, can you give just a brief summary as to what T-Pop's all about, please?
Yeah, so the People's Operator is a phone network. We operate in two territories, the United States of America and the United Kingdom. And our core proposition is that 10% of our bill goes to a cause of your choice. So 10% of whatever your bill is goes to a charity that you choose. So it empowers people to really help causes they love. We, as I say, operate in the US and the UK. We operate on four, we're a virtual network. So we buy wholesale from the sort of fixed infrastructure providers. So that could be Sprint and other companies in the US, or in the UK, Three, or other companies. So we're similar to other MVNOs in the market that you might have heard of.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Okay, the final full year results ended the 31st of December 2016. So just a couple of highlights there. So revenue was 3.4 million, representing growth of 63% there. Now, I think some of the share price is down here. And I think because essentially you guided beforehand to 3.6 rather than 3.4, didn't you? So what happened there, Mar? Why did it come in short, do you think?
Yeah, I think, and I just I'd have to check the figures, but I think the figures we've given are after our was still a significant increase of 63% on the year. and I think, and I just have to check, but that could have been before donations. So okay. We do a revenue, and then we do revenue before donations.
Yeah, yeah.
So 3.4 million was our, obviously, revenue for the year, but I might have to check. That may have been before donations, but it was very close.
Okay, all right. And someone's pointed out to me on social media, though, that a previous guidance was also changed a while back. I mean, originally, I think end of last year, you had a guidance of 8 million, and obviously that's come down. So is there difficulty in this area, sort of targeting? Why was it so far
reduced? Well, it's very simple. As you know, we'd lowered our forecast anyway to 3.6, so that was the number that was in the market. And we got extremely close to that, actually. Yeah. So I don't think there should be any huge surprise there. We weren't far off. It was actually above 3.4 million, the exact figure, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think there should be any particular surprise. It was still a significant increase on the year before.
Yeah, yeah.
And as I say, the guidance had already been reissued well before, and.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, let's go to. So, the loss was what? 8.7 million, wasn't it?
Mm, yeah, yeah. Of course, that included a lot of impairments. So, that wasn't a sort of straight cash loss.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, I mean, obviously, focusing on the cash burn here. I mean, I know you've been actively trying to bring that down. How is that going? Because, I mean, if you break it into two bits, because, I mean, I think you made a loss for 3.95. In the first half, and second half is 4.7. So the cash burn seems to be going up in the second half, doesn't it?
Well, obviously, we did a couple of funding rounds later 2016 and early 2017. We also took in some more funding, and we took that funding to increase and grow our sales and take advantage of the opportunities that were available to us. So, of course, therefore, burn goes up a bit because you're putting that money that you're giving into the market. People gave it to us to put into the market to drive our sales, to drive the ongoing projects within the business, which we have been doing very effectively. Mm. So our burn rate is in line with our plan for the year.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I mean, I know February's growth was very good. You give a bullish update, 25.6.
January, February, very good.
Yeah, January. So what's happened? Because I noticed in the update it said growth has slowed in March and April. What's happened there?
Yeah, so very straightforward. I can bring people right up today. Very straightforward. So we had really, really good growth in January and February. Growth then slowed in March and April. Due to issues and delays in some of our marketing programs and also some of the markets that we were operating in. However, then we saw a good uptick in May and June. We're now seeing record activations across the business as the marketing programs that we put in place are bearing fruit. So sales now are the highest level they've ever been in the history of the business.
Yeah.
And for the first time ever, we're selling in both territories, both in the UK, we're pushing, and in the US, with very good results. So our current position is actually really good in terms of where we want to be in line with our plan. Mm-hmm. So this is why slightly surprising, obviously, the share price dropped today, but it's slightly out of kilter with where we're at in reality. We didn't lose customers. We didn't, our sales, we didn't get any smaller during March and April. We didn't grow at the same rate as January and February, which were exceptional. May saw a decent uptick, and June, again, has got record trading in the business. So in terms of sales, in terms of activations in both territories. So that's where we are, sort of right up till to this point today. So internally, actually, the picture at the moment is very strong.
Yeah. Well, I think investors, has seen the results, and obviously, let's make it clear here. These results are to the end of the 31st of December, so it's, over 6 months ago. So, assume you moved on. Yeah. Like I said, January, February, the growth was good. I think what disappointed was that March and April you slowed, where people assumed this growth was going to continue.
I think so. I think so. I think the growth we were expecting to come through in March and April didn't come through as strongly as we'd hoped. However, that level of growth we are seeing again in June.
Okay.
And it upticked towards the end of May. So, there's seasonality that comes into it. And, every month I guess, just couldn't have performed that strongly. Much as we'd hoped it would, some of the marketing elements took longer to put in place, some had to be delayed. However, now those things are happening. We're getting the sales we expected. In fact, to be frank, we're getting higher than the sales we expected. So that level of growth has returned, but I bet there were 2 months where it didn't grow at the rate, that sort of double-digit rate, if you like, per month.
But did it grow?
Sales
did
are
it,
very,
did
very strong now.
Did it grow in March?
But it grew. No, it grew, but it grew. We had growth. We've had growth in every month, but we've not had the same level of growth as we had in January and February.
Okay.
That didn't happen in March and April. We had growth, but relatively low growth compared to those months. We saw then an uptick in May, and June has been a record month in terms of activations and sales across the business.
Okay, excellent stuff. And as far as, I suppose all it comes down to a business essentially is, revenue coming in, cash burn, and the cash you have. So what is the cash burn situation? I know you're actively trying to get that down. How is that going?
Yeah, so the cash position is pretty much in line with our plan for the year. As I say, we are burning, we took in money to burn in terms of sales and marketing activity, which is now happening very effectively. We're very pleased. Our ARPUs are still staying very strong, the average revenue we get per user, and our cost per acquisition is still by far the lowest in the industry. I mean, it's just a fraction of what other networks pay. So the actual underlying model of the business is very sound. I mean, I honestly think, I think it's a fair statement to say that we're potentially the most efficient telco in the world. We often say this within the business. We look at what other people are doing. We see the results from other, say, competitors in the United States, and we see they're paying over $100 cost per acquisition. We see they're spending 20 times as much as we are to get similar customer numbers. So the underlying model is very, very sound. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of encouraging signs within the business.
Can you explain that, actually? Because when I was reading through the update, and I'm not an expert on telcos, but I did see average revenue per user in the US was $22, and average customer acquisition cost is $22. So
So the average revenue per user is $20.94 per month, and our cost per acquisition is $21.71 to acquire that customer. So obviously, the customer.
So that's a one-off cost, is it? The acquisition.
That's a one-off cost.
Yeah.
That's our total one-off cost to get a customer. So, if you were to join TPO in the US, for us to, the average cost of getting you as a customer is $21.71, and the amount you give us every month on average will be $20.94. Obviously, we have very good margin. We have good margin on that. And so our ROI on that doesn't take too long. It doesn't take too many months.
I mean, that was a bit confusing because I saw that, and because it's a one-off cost, people may not realise that. So
that average revenue per user, just to be clear, is a monthly revenue.
Yeah.
So the ARPU is not our lifetime. That's how much we get per month from a customer. So pretty much we get per month from a customer the amount we pay to acquire them. We then obviously make good margin on that customer, and the payback is within a few months, it's in a number of months.
Okay.
And then the total cost to acquire is wiped out, and then obviously forwards, that customer is profitable for their life cycle with their business.
I understand, yeah. And so, looking at this now, the going forward, obviously you've had the benefit now of seeing 6 months worth of sales of 2017, and you know what you're burning. And I mean, you hopefully, as a business, you're hoping to achieve, profitability, and cash flow break even there. So, when are you targeting that, Mark? Hopefully, at current levels.
That is targeted for Q3, Q4 next year. The same, I think, as we said last time. That still remains on target, and we are still in line with our plan. That is still our target. The burn is coming down, even though we're putting efforts into marketing and advertising. Our actual gross profit in terms of the airtime profit that we see across the group has shown a 66.5% increase. So between January 17 and May 17, we saw a 66.5% increase in our group airtime profit. So basically the amount that we sell a package for relative to the amount that we're buying it for.
Okay. And
our profit margins are up, if you like, along with subscribers. So obviously that's very important.
Yeah, absolutely. And so at the moment, obviously, the share price is down. I mean, are you thinking that maybe RNS, obviously, it's for the results last year, so you can only put a certain amount of forward guidance.
Well, this is it, yeah. Yeah, so it was quite conservative, obviously, the RNS, and it mainly focused on last year, which I think people had already factored in. So this, obviously, current trading update, I think, is more what people should be looking at and is more relevant than what happened. Because obviously everything in 16 was prior to our fundraise in December 16 and prior to our funding that we had got in March 17.
Yeah.
And obviously we've already put a trading update in March. Everyone knew we had a very good January and February. So I think our RNS obviously was more related to 16 and were in its sort of reading, if you like.
Yeah, yeah. And talking about funding, obviously you will need funding. How much cash do you have to last you? How long can you last current cash burn?
Well, you know, our cash position is as it is in our plan. We're in line with our plan. As a company, we look at our cash position, and if we thought we could needed funding or there was the opportunity to take funding at a decent value, you know, it's all to do with the price of the equity, then we'd obviously consider that at the time. But currently, we're on target with our plan. Our sort of cash is where it's supposed to be. And our increases and our monthly revenue in June are very encouraging. And our subscribers are very encouraging.
Marvellous. Well, listen, Mark, you know, you obviously think you've been oversold here, and people may see an opportunity, and if you think there's an opportunity here, and people are listening to this thinking, hang on a sec, I like what he's saying about the forward guidance here, and they're not following you on Vox, could you, you know, in three bullet points, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please?
Yeah, we are a phone network that is live in two of the biggest, most profitable markets in the world. We are growing at the fastest rate we've ever grown. June has seen record activations. We have the lowest cost per acquisition in the entire industry, and our ARPUs are as high as any network. So we take as much money in per user as other networks. It costs us, though, a fraction of what it costs them to get a customer, and we're in two of the biggest markets in the world and growing at record figures in June.
Marvellous, Mark. Good to chat to you. Thanks for coming on at such short notice. And
No problem.
Hopefully speak again soon.
Yeah, speak to you soon. Thank you very much for your time.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Vasily Kareles, CEO of OTAC Resources. That's OTC ticker. Vasily, thanks for coming on.
Good morning, Justin. Thank you.
Yeah, I've seen you mentioned on social media. John Mayer came on and chatted about you, so I thought... Yes, sounds very interesting. Let's get the guys on here. And so, for people not aware of you, Vasily, can you give a brief summary as to what OTAC Resources is all about, please?
Yep, sure. OTAC is a name-quoted exploration and development company with a diversified portfolio of projects and interests in other exploration companies, with a focus on large-scale gold, copper, and cobalt projects. The portfolio spans several commodities and jurisdictions, and the assets are at a variety of different stages in their development profile.
Yes. Okay. Well, let's delve a bit deeper into some of the news you've had out of late, Vasily. So today, the share price was reacting positively to the mining permit. Can you explain what that's about and the significance of that, please?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, we have a mining license area in Slovakia, and part of you know, having a mining license area is that you have to be, you know, mining in that mining license area. So this is a key permit which you know, we had initially and had been revoked by a regional court and has been recently or has been reinstated by the Mining Bureau. So it's a key permit, and to be honest, it's also one of the boxes that needed to be ticked with respect to sort of the ongoing discussions we've been having with our local JV partner, which at the moment we have a non-binding MOU in place, but you know, working towards getting that sort of formalized and then developing a slightly different strategy to progress the development of this project.
Yeah, yeah. And so where is this project now as far as, you know, the resource and essentially what's next there?
Sure, we've got a 1.3 million ounce resource, of which 1 million ounces is in measured and indicated. We've completed a pre-feasibility study, which you know, has demonstrated, you know, with the current resource that's there, we have proven and probable reserves of just under 900,000 ounces of gold equivalent, or gold at an equivalent grade of around 2 grams a ton gold. So it's actually quite a value, the in-situ value there at current gold prices is well over $1 billion. So it's certainly a project that merits, you know, patience.
Okay, excellent. Well, let's go back a bit further chronologically. The next bit of news was an update on the inferred mineral resource at, excuse the pronunciation, the Ekiyanga deposit in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Can you take us into that, please, Vasily?
Yeah, sure. It's, an investment we went into, I think, January last year. We're now at an effective 45% holding post-conversion. And as you've mentioned, it's the Ekiyanga deposit is the central deposit in a highly prospective 60-kilometer-long gold corridor in the sort of South Kivu province of the DRC. It is CAS's most advanced project. It has a JORC code-compliant resource of 1 million ounces at 2.2 grams a ton gold, or over 2.2 grams a ton gold at a 1.5 gram cutoff. If we lower that cutoff to half a gram, that goes over 1.5 million ounces. It's a shallow open pittable deposit with excellent metallurgy. We're looking at a very high gravity recovery there. They have been granted 3 contiguous mining licenses over the 60 kilometer long gold corridor. And the project can, the Kianga deposit where it's located, it can piggyback off the existing infrastructure that's in place there. CASA is at the moment investigating a low strip, low cost open pit operation. The simple metallurgy means that the deposit is amenable to standard gold processing. And part of the investigations is, that's going on is to sort of try and push that resource to demonstrate at least that there's potential there for more than 2 million ounces within the next 2 million ounces gold within the next 12 months, and then move that forward through the various technical studies that need to be done, targeting, you know, an annualized production of sort of circa 100,000 ounces per annum. So we believe that, you know, Ekiyanga has considerable resource upside and potential for further discoveries and ore bodies along that 60 kilometer gold belt.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, you've definitely been busy this this month, because on the 14th of June, you announced the conversion of convertible loan notes into equity of Zamsort Limited. So take us into this, please, Vasily, and, you know, what's happening here?
Yeah, sure. I mean, Zamsort, we've got an effective 19.35%, of which we've announced the conversion of 14, and rolling forward the balance outstanding through to the end of 2018. Zamsort, you know, the initial approach Zamsort have taken was to develop a small copper cobalt leach plant. They unfortunately didn't quite get there in the end, and at the moment looking to raise money via potential lenders, which is slightly delaying things, but it looks like that they should be on track again shortly, hopefully, if all things pan out. As I mentioned earlier, the approach is slightly unorthodox, because you know, they've decided that, well, the mineralization is visible on surface, we'll just build the plant and mine it, whereas traditionally you'd go there and actually drill it out. But I guess the significant thing about the this particular license is that they're sitting on a, you know, in what we consider to be one of the most prospective, unexplored parts of the copper belt, the Domes region. You know, this piece of ground, it hasn't had any exploration done on it since sort of the late or early 90s. And if you consider that in the Domes region in the last 10 years, you've had 3 big mines that have gone into production. And the last one is First Quantum's Trident project, which they've invested over $2 billion to get that project going. And that's only sits 40 kilometers on the other side of the dome to ZAMSOR's 1,000 square kilometer exploration license there. So at the moment, the Calibre deposit where they're building the leach plant is a copper cobalt project. But, we see potential apart from Calibre, we see massive potential in the rest of that license area. So there's a lot of value to be unlocked there potentially.
I understand. Okay, just covering the last bit of news here. On the 6th of June, you announced a corporate update, and in that you announced you've completed a reverse circulation drill program at Andiamo in Eritrea. So take us into this, if you could, Vasily.
Yeah, I mean, we hold an 18% or 18.5% interest in Andiamo Exploration, who are the holder of the Hakata license in Eritrea. The projects are at an early stage of exploration, and Andiamo are exploring for copper, gold, zinc as well, VMS-style deposits in the western end of the same belt that hosts Nefson's world-class Bisha mine. Recently Nefson, it was announced that they had acquired Reservoir Gold for all those hundreds of millions of dollars, and the money generated for that acquisition was actually out of Eritrea. So Andiamo has identified a number of untested targets, and given that VMS deposits typically occur in clusters, we still view the ground there as highly prospective, because in effect, Nefson's exploration has sort of started drifting southwards towards the northern boundary of Andiamo's license area. So, potentially, we're looking, if they do get that discovery hole there, then, this certainly could unlock another VMS deposit in that part of the world.
Excellent. So you've got sort of four investments projects going on. And at the moment, on times, line-wise, what is the focus here? What's the next thing you think will be producing significant sort of news for investors?
Well, with CASA, the resource update, and with drilling about to commence, and then the results of that, and further drill programs, particularly if the new revised geological model proves to be true, then there's significantly more resources there to be discovered. With Andiamo, obviously the results from their drill campaign that they've just completed, the reverse circulation drill campaign. With Slovakia, getting mining. We've got the permit now, and now we're just waiting for that to be enforced and to get mining, and then obviously to sort of cement that relationship with the potential JV partner. And with ZAMSOR, just to, seeing them through into production and working with them on that large exploration license area where we believe there's a potential for another one of these elephant-type discoveries to be made.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? Like I said, you're a sub 6 million market cap company. You seem to have a lot going on. And if people are listening right now, Vasily, but they're not following you on Vox Markets, could you give them sort of three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please?
Sure. Well, we have a diversified portfolio of projects with, diversification in commodities as well as jurisdictional risk. A lot of these projects have had quite a lot of expenditure on them. I mean, CASA has had, $30 million to date. Mm-hmm. Similarly, you could say that too with Slovakia. So in terms of money gone in already, a significant, a lot of these projects have been significantly de-risked. And then the value gap we see with respect to our peer group. Just one of these projects potentially could justify the market capital, the current market capitalization of the company. So, we see a lot of, value upside in terms of unlocking value for shareholders.
Yeah, absolutely. Vasily, thank you very much for coming on. And like you said, you've got a lot going on. So no doubt, hopefully we'll speak again in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Pleasure. Thank you, Justin.
Okay, it's time for today's suggested one for your watch list. It is Europa Oil and Gas, EOG ticker there, submitted by John. Thanks for that, John. This is just information, not intended as investment advice. The company is an oil exploration and production company. Share price 6 pence, market cap 18 million, Shares an issue, 301 million. What revenue, profit or loss did the company generate? Check these figures, please. It's part of your research, if you want to do research. So, John says, from recent interims, 6 months to Jan 2017, revenue £811,000, net loss of £139,000. How much cash or debt does the company have? As of the 31st of Jan 2017, cash was 1.39 million and debt was 2.8 million. They just raised 2.1 million at 6 pence through a placing and then another 1.3 million at open offer at 6 pence. Current cash after working cap adjustment, which is 500,000 for 12 months, estimated to be 4.5 million as of June 2017. There's three reasons why someone should add this company to their watch list. Number one, current production of 100 barrels a day. Break even on all company operating expenses at 55 barrels all. Russell will bring another 100 barrels of production plus 1.3 million from Upland. This would bring operating expenses down to $47 per barrel break-even at operating profit level. Reason two, Irish portfolio currently 7 licenses. They have 4.7 billion barrels recoverable and 1.5 TCF of gas. Drill-ready prospects totaling 1.5 billion, billion barrels equivalent to be drilled in 2018. They farmed out 70% of LO-1619 to Khan for carry on 3D seismic, estimated to be 0.7 billion barrels of oil equivalent. And work is currently starting on reinterpretation of key prospects across Irish portfolio. PVR drilling, if successful, should generate an interest in EOG. It's set to be a key player in the Atlantic margin. And reason three, Holmwood will be drilled in Q3 2017. Europa are free carried for this drill. Claughton gas appraisal, 162 BCF. Or 56.7 BCF net. 3D seismic needs to take place and well drilled to prove commercial rates. So that's Europa Oil and Gas, EOG, submitted by John. Thanks for that. John, if you know of a company you think should be on people's watch list, by all means submit it. Go to voxmarkets.co.uk/blog and just scroll down for the link there and fill in the form. All right, here are the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, New Oil and Gas, NUOG. At four, URU Metals, that's URU. At three, Great Western Mining Corporation, GWMO. At two, EVR Holdings, that's EVRH. And number one, Seven Digital, 7DIG, of course. I chatted to Pete, their deputy CEO, on yesterday's podcast, if you want to check that out. Episode 807, I think. Okay, today's top five most liked RNSs were at five, the People's Operator, Board Changes. At four, Motif Bio, presents at ID Week 2017. At three, Georgian Mining Corporation, final results and notice of AGM. At two, Talao Energy, director appointment. And number one most liked RNS, a cracking RNS actually, EVRH Holdings, or EVR Holdings, EVRH ticker, and that's a global partnership with Microsoft Corporation. Doesn't get much bigger than that, does it really? Well, apart from maybe Apple. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.